Hey everybody, Andrew here. Just before we get started, I just want to let you all know that due to a lot of things happening in my personal life, I was unable to get this episode out until now. This was recorded all the way back in May. So the news pieces are going to be a little old, but still totally relevant to what me and my guests are going to be talking about. So I hope you enjoy the episode. And now on to episode 6 of the Superman Family Podcast. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Superman Family Podcast, the podcast dedicated to covering the Superman family, past and present. This is episode 6, and I am your host, Andrew Pinkham. Hey everybody, I just want to welcome you back at what seems like an extremely long hiatus, and I do apologize for a lot of stuff that's been going on in my personal life. Really, I just bought, in the process of buying a condo, which is really sucked a lot of my free time, so therefore, because of that, I haven't been able to put out much podcasts except for the Kara Zor-El podcast, but this isn't a Supergirl podcast, so I want to really focus on getting the greatest superhero of all time, which is Superman, talked about. And like I've mentioned on the last show, I'm going to be taking a new direction, covering the new 52 Superman titles. Excluding Supergirl, because Danny and I talk about Supergirl over on the Kara Zor-El podcast. So that's going to include Superman, Action Comics, and Superboy, and everything else related to Superman. Probably the new Superman Unchained title, and maybe that new Superman Batman title as well. But you never know. We'll have to wait and see. But really, before I go any further, I wanted to introduce and welcome back from our last episode. If you listen to the last episode, you'll know him already. He's brought some class to this podcast in a big way. He's been a big supporter of all my shows. Excuse me, all my shows, from my Supergirl show to my Wonder Woman show, and is the biggest Superman fan I personally know. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Stephen Vaughn. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good, mate. You?
I am great. Thanks for coming back on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Any chance I've got to talk in depth is fine.
Awesome.
Fine with me.
Awesome. So what's been going on with you, man?
Not much. Job hunting, which is always full of trials and tribulations.
Yes.
I've got the, like, two final stages, and I'm just waiting to hear back from the decision makers on whether or not I'm going forward with one of two jobs.
Gotcha.
So hopefully the one I want is in Manchester. I won't say the company. They probably won't listen, but I won't say it anyway. But that's the
what kind of work is it?
It's a marketing job that's It's what my background's in. It's what my degree's in.
Oh, okay. So you have a very similar background than I do, because my degree is in advertising. So
marketing and the media.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a great ride, and I was lucky enough to get an internship that built my skill set up, and then I got to find people to employ me to pay me to do what I was doing for free, and that job finished, and now I'm just freelance for a little bit, and now I'm back on the market for a big company. And hopefully I found it. Just fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, we'll definitely be we'll be wanting an update from you, sure. I'll be definitely praying for that too.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Like I said in the intro, a lot's been going on with me. I've been just super busy with my condo searching. I'm trying to get a condo purchased, and that's been a process in and of itself. Going to the bank, getting a loan, talking to a realtor, getting that all straightened out. And I put in an offer yesterday, and hopefully it'll come through with flying colors, and hopefully I'll be out of my parents' house, hopefully by June, early July, if everything works the way I want it to. So, but that's really what's been going on with me and why I haven't been really podcasting except for the Cures Are All podcast. I've given Danny enough shout-outs already on this show. Ridiculous.
Yeah, so, with all the house buying and meetings with the bank, it doesn't sound like you got time to do anything.
I really haven't. No, I've barely had time to even go to sleep. I mean, I would meet with the realtor. I mean, we met with the realtor on Monday, and I mean, me and my mom didn't get home till probably 7 o'clock. And I mean, that just doesn't leave time for anything. Maybe an hour of stuff, maybe an hour or two stuff before I just crash and burn. Because I mean, I get up ridiculously early. I mean, I get up at 5:30 every day to drive down to my job to be at my job by 7. So that doesn't leave much time for anything, including podcasting. So
yeah, if only you could monetize your site and the podcasts to pay you, then you could stop that ridiculous job.
I know, right? I'm not sure anybody would pay me to podcast about Superman, but I mean, that'd be awesome, though.
Yeah, you never know. You just need some eccentric billionaire.
Right?
That takes a shine to you, and then they'll just do anything. You can just get like an artist grant.
Yeah, maybe someone like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, exactly. He pays for anything.
I quickly want to talk about, I haven't talked much about it, but the Superman 75th anniversary is this year. As a matter of fact, I believe his birthday was in June, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is in June.
But I think this, when Action Comics was released, I think it's been. I think we missed it by about 2 weeks.
Oh, did we? Well,
yeah, I think
that's all right.
Yeah, it's okay. But yeah, I think it's June is his birthday.
Better late than never, I suppose.
Yeah, indeed. He could be like the Queen, though. The Queen's got two birthdays, so maybe Superman's got two birthdays
as
well.
Yeah, maybe. That's never true.
Yeah, one of my mates' dads has had two birthdays.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He's from India originally. His dad was, and he was born like on a farm, and they didn't have birth certificates or anything like that. So when he came to England back in the 60s, they asked him for a birthday date, and he didn't know it. So he said the 24th of December, not knowing what the 24th of December was.
Christmas Eve.
So he's got like the birth exactly. So we picked the worst birthday to have.
Oh, and that's no.
That was his English birthday, and then they figured out that he was born sometime around July, June or July time, so they had two, like the Queen.
That's awesome. That means he gets double the presents, right?
No. It's
no?
Not at all.
No, darn.
No, just the one. Much like, because I'm a December baby as well, I was born a week before Christmas, and people tried to give me a birthday and Christmas present.
When's your birthday, sir?
18th. So
no kidding. Really?
Yeah. So sometimes I got a Christmas present, which was a birthday present.
Gotcha. Well, mine's on the 12th, believe it or not.
December's the worst time.
Yeah. I mean, I still get presents on my birthday, but I mean, it's not so close to Christmas, but I mean, my family's still pretty awesome about it. I've had birthday parties in the month of December, which around here, it's not exactly the best time to have a birthday party. considering there's normally snow on the ground.
Yeah, well, same here, because all my sisters have got summer birthdays, so they had bouncy castles and outdoor parties, and then I had, like, torrential rainfall, and...
Yeah.
And we just, like, might as well go to the cinema.
Yeah, do you guys get a lot of snow over in Liverpool?
We can, sometimes, but not as much as probably you do.
Yeah, but, no, our average snowfall on a yearly basis here is about 10 feet or more.
You see, that would literally bring England to its knees. 2 inches of snow destroys our public transport system, and yeah. People just be idiots, and they can't walk in a straight line, and they drive ridiculously slow.
Yeah,
and people
go to the house. Yeah, so I kind of relate it to snow when Southerners in the southern part of our country get snow. Everything is at a standstill because they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, they're just like, what is this white powder that's falling from the sky?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, is there an apocalypse going on or what?
Exactly, yeah. They just have no clue. But we get snow like January, February time, which is weird because that's when it should be getting slightly a little bit warmer. But like last 2 years ago, it was a big white Christmas, and this year wasn't.
Yeah.
But January and February were, and it, like I said, it brought our country to its knees.
Yeah, here it's ridiculously cold in the month of January and February. So some days don't even hit 0 degrees. It's just ridiculously cold.
I always imagine there's loads of Mr. Plows as well roaming around your countryside.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's lots of plows all over the place. But,
that's what we
I did want to mention, actually, we're getting into the news section here. The Superman celebration is June 6th and 9th in Metropolis, Illinois. How cool would it be to live in Metropolis, sir?
I think it'd be great.
Yeah, I do too. I'm actually hoping... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I think I might get a little old after about a couple of years, but I think it'd be good. It's a good novelty thing. It's always good to have like a license plate that says Metropolis.
Right.
That's real.
Yeah, you just stick it up on your wall or something.
No, yeah, I'm sure they've got loads. The tourism board there has got all that kind of stuff that you can buy.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Someday I'm actually hoping to go to the Superman celebration. It's every year. Unfortunately, plane tickets are mega expensive right now. So, and therefore I'm going to be broke because I'm going to be buying a condo at some point, whether it be here now or later on down the line, I'm going to be very poor.
Yeah. Growing up is terrible because it's all the responsibilities of adulthood.
Yeah, I know, right? You have to pay for lots of stuff.
When I was a dirt poor student, putting myself through university with my part-time job, I had more money than when I used to work for a bank, getting paid a nice salary. I had more money when I was a student than I did then. Just because of all the bills.
Yeah, no, it's being an adult is not fun, sir.
it's really not.
But that's why we dive into comics, I think.
Yes, yeah, just to keep that little adolescent spirit alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to the next bit of news here. JMS, J. Michael Straczynski, is doing a Superman Earth 1 Part 3. What are your thoughts on this, sir? Have you read the first two?
Yeah, I read the first one when it came out because I got it for a Christmas present.
Yeah.
And I thought there were parts that were a bit weak, but overall it was a great reintroduction or a reinterpretation of an origin. And I liked some of his character work, and I thought the second one was just a big action spectacle, and I liked the way they redesigned Parasite.
Yeah.
And I like his take on it, and I like that DC's embracing its multiverse again.
Right. I do too.
I've always liked that. So it was good. I know both of them were on the New York Times bestseller list, so there was bound to be a part three because it was profitable.
Yeah.
I just hope the same team's on it because I'd like the same arc. I like Shane Davis and Sandra Hope to stay.
Yeah.
So they're a really good team.
No, I mean they did a fantastic. I mean, like I'm pretty sure I told this to Danny. I mean, JMS could write a Superman title now, and I think Superman fans would be elated with him. Because, I mean, both of these volumes were excellent. I mean, I liked part one. Part two, though, was much better than part one, I thought.
And I
love the fact that they brought back the original costume with the trunks, everything. I just liked it a lot. Good stuff. And I'm glad we didn't get a version of Superman. That's the new 52 Superman. I don't mind the changing costume to the new 52 Superman, but I still am a purist when it comes to Superman. I love the old costume.
So do I, and I also don't like the fact that it grows as Will. That's the only thing I can't get my head around. It seems like a symbiote.
Oh, really?
Which reminds me of Spider-Man and Venom and Carnage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it when he rips open his shirt and the costume's underneath and he has to wear it all the time.
Right. Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. I just don't like the high collar either, but the new suit has grown on me. They said over time, it's been 2 years, so...
Yeah. I guess that's a springboard off of, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. What are your thoughts on this whole new 52 revamp? I know we haven't really talked much last episode because we were talking Man of Steel, but I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole new 52 idea revamp? I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of it when they decided to reboot what was a really good Supergirl title, and I really loved the Superman title at the same time. I mean, Grounded was a little weak, but at the same time, it was still Superman, and I thought it was good. So, I mean, I really didn't understand why they decided to go forward with this whole new 52 revamp.
I think I wasn't angry, but I was a bit miffed and upset when they announced it was rebooting a universe that I invested so much of my childhood in. It was probably like 15 years, well, probably more, about 20 years that I invested my time and my money and my energy into the world. And I think now comics has this thing, a stigma with big numbers, and people don't know whether or not they can just jump in and read. And when you've got films that are being released and people are going to see it in the millions, and then you look at the comic sales and it's only like a couple of thousand, 100,000 if you're really, really lucky on something like The Walking Dead. I think it was a nice shot in the arm, and it was a good jumping on point for everyone that's not a comics purist. But I also thought if you were going to reboot the entire world, then everyone had to be rebooted.
So I didn't like with you there.
And I didn't like they ported the Green Lantern stuff over. But I don't think they've fit it seamlessly. I don't think they fit existing continuity seamlessly into the new one, because there's a lot of missing characters that people would really enjoy. But in terms of Superman, I wasn't a fan of the Grounded storyline. I thought it was more of a nice idea, a nice concept, and a very weak execution. I thought the art was very off. There wasn't a consistency. I thought the John Cassidy covers were ugly and some of the worst art that I've seen on them. And it took him and Warren Ellis like 4 or 5 years to complete a 24-issue run on Authority back in the old Wildstorm days, because his art took so much time because it was so detailed and really well done. And I thought his covers just looked incredibly rushed. But I felt the reboot was good for Superman because it made him a more vital character. And when you had World of New Krypton back in 07, was it, or 08?
Yeah, something like that.
He was off-world for a whole year, and then you had Mon-El and Nightwing and Flamebird, which were good stories in themselves, but they weren't Superman. And then he came back, and he was walking and not using his powers and really addressing human issues instead of like big action high concept issues. So I thought he needed to be repositioned as more vital in the world and force the comics community and the public at large to recognize that he's the first and greatest hero that they've got in their canon and should be at the top and the best seller and should have the best teams on there. And I think that's what the new 52 did for Superman.
For sure. One thing about the new super uh the New 52 revamp that I didn't like is I was not a fan of this Golden Age costume or this action costume, and I was really miffed that they decided to revamp Action Comics. They, in my opinion, they just should have left it well enough alone. I mean, you had a run that was going 900 plus issues. I mean, you're probably never going to see that kind of number again. As to why they decided to renumber Action, really kind of, and really Detective, because Detective was running a long time too. So I mean, I just don't understand as to why they felt it necessary to revamp both those historic titles that have been around since the 30s. And I just had a real problem with that.
As did I, but you'll always see the big numbers come back because they want to capitalize on important anniversary issues. Because Detective just had its 900th issue.
Oh, really? It did?
I think issue 19 was its 900th printing. And that was like a $7.99 book. So they'll get your money that way. When Action goes to 1,000, they would definitely celebrate it. It'll be on the cover.
Yeah.
But I don't think they can... I don't want them to go back because they took such a big step of rebooting everybody. It'd be kind of like a defeatist. They have to, for better or worse, continue with this.
Yeah.
Continuity they've established. And that's more ballsy, is getting rid of the history and starting from scratch, much more than what Marvel does, which is just seem to reboot their titles with every new issue number one when a creative team takes over.
Right.
Because I think some of their continuity needs to be streamlined a little bit as well.
Yeah, I'm not reading any Marvel titles right now. I'm just really I haven't bought any New 52 books in paper. All my New 52 reading is via my iPad, which, I mean, paper issues are just expensive enough. I mean, and I love digital comics for one. I mean, whenever I go to the comic shop, which is not very often because I live in a very rural area. I mean, literally, my nearest comic shop is over an hour away. And that's another...
Would you ever try, like, DCBS?
Oh, what is that? Is that just like a mail-in service?
Yeah, that discount comic book service. It's got, like, crazy discounts.
I know, I've never tried anything like that.
Well, I get mine from mail order from a company called Disposable Heroes, and they're brilliant.
Really?
They're based on Ireland and they're the cheapest by far online, and they always get like all the stock I get is superior. It comes bagged and boarded, and there's never any rips or tears or anything.
That's fantastic. Maybe when I get into my own place, I'll give that a shot. But yeah. I mean, I really do love digital comics. Do you get digital comics on your Nexus?
Yeah, only the digital first titles.
Oh, really?
So like Smallville, Superman Beyond.
Yeah.
I read Arrow because I watch the TV series. The Batman titles, and obviously the new Adventures of Superman when it comes on.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that. And I like the Monkey Brain stuff. The Edison Rex.
What is that? Monkey Brain?
Yeah, it's a digital first platform. And it's basically original series by the publisher. Monkey Brain is by Chris Roberson, who used to write for Superman.
Really?
And his wife. Yeah, he wrote Straczynski's Grounded story. He took over from that. And he done iZombie and Vertigo.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that was announced that Chris Robinson was taking over the Superman books.
Yeah, he got really fed up with mainstream and decided to do his own company so he could do his own titles, and it's basically 69p on Comixology, which I think works out about 99 cents for you.
Yeah.
It's just some great, fun, inventive comics, and I know they're getting released in hardcover formats through different publishers, but because it's so cheap, the platform, and it's got really good names attached to it, and the art's really good, there's something there for everyone.
Yeah,
they're the kind of digital comics that I like because they're designed with the digital forum in mind. Whereas I think the issues that I get in print and you get digitally, I think they just scan the the print version and then just make the panel layout sync up with that. Whereas the ones that are digital first, I think they have the digital mindset in mind when they're plotting the story, so they know where certain beats have to fall because of the way you're reading the page is different on a screen than it is when you've got it in hand.
Yeah.
So I like them digital, but I tried to read the Smallville Collected in the printed version, and it just didn't flow for me after the first issue, so I stopped and just went straight to digital for them.
Yeah, Smallville's been outstanding, sir. I absolutely love that book. I read it on a weekly basis. Just fantastic stuff.
Sometimes I just think, why wasn't this the TV show? After 5 years, did they not just rebrand it Metropolis and have Tom Welling as Superman?
It's because Tom Welling didn't want to be in the suit.
I know.
He had no desire to be in a Superman suit.
Kind of like Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. Just using it as a platform to get themselves more well-known and then not embracing who
it is. I honestly don't think Tom did that, but I mean, I don't think he's done anything since Smallville ended. Maybe some directorial stuff, but he's not acted in anything that I know of. I could be wrong about that, but...
Yeah, no, I don't think I've seen him in much, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's going to be Clark Kent probably for the rest of his life, so...
I know what, if you're an actor, that's all you want to be known as, is an actor, and as long as he made his living from it, I'm sure he'd done very well from the TV show.
Yeah, no doubt, no question.
10 years on a very high-rated show, I'm sure he's got a nice chunk of change that he can live off with and live the life he's always wanted.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. What have you thought about this, everything we've seen from this Superman Unbound DC direct-to-video movie?
I don't like it's called Unbound, because I just want them to call it Brainiac, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
From the Geoff Johns storyline that led into World of New Krypton.
Right.
And I think it looks good. Matthew Bomer, who I know was linked to the Superman role years ago, before Bryan Singer took over, I've heard his voice. I think he does a really good portrayal. My girlfriend's a huge fan of him from White Collar.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen a few episodes of that, and he's a really good actor. But I think they've picked a really good Supergirl within Molly Quinn. I think she's got the evidence for a voice. Whereas I know you didn't like Summer Glau in Apocalypse. I liked her, but... She didn't feel like a teenager. She felt like someone who's in her late 20s.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was my problem with Summer Glau in Superman Batman Apocalypse, because you're right. She did sound like someone in her 20s and not very much a teenager. And I think that's the difference between, like, say, Summer Glau and Molly Quinn. I mean, Molly's still a teenager herself. She's only 18. So
that works well. I know she's on cast.
Yeah, she is on Castle. I've not seen Castle. I've seen maybe one episode of Castle, and that's it.
Much like the X-Files before it, all the cases of the week are really not that important. It's more about the interactions between the two leads.
Yeah.
And the brilliant chemistry, and it works really well.
Right.
And anything Nathan Fillion in it is worth a watch.
No, no kidding. No, I love him as Green Lantern. His voice is just perfect for Green Lantern to me. I mean, I love First Flight. First Flight was awesome.
Yeah, I think I remember that one. I'm thinking of the anthology one.
Oh, yeah, that was really good, too. I liked that a lot as well.
I think I watched that more than the other, just for Mogo Doesn't Socialize story.
Yeah, right.
I really like that Alan Moore story.
Yeah, that was a good story, for sure. Moving on to the next news, little piece of news here. Cyborg Superman's coming back to the DC Universe. Have you seen this, or have you heard about it?
Yeah, I saw it on, I think it was Friday when it released it, on Comic Vine. The design is interesting, I think, to say the least. I don't like his left arm. I don't know what they're doing there. I don't know if that's the final design, but it looks... elongated and complicated. is the best way I can describe it, but he's got, it's not like the old Cyborg Superman where he's got half, just like a quarter of his face missing.
Right.
Metallic, and then he's got this, the one part, I think it's the right side, where it's just his eye and you can see Superman there.
Yeah.
But it's a good design.
Do you think this might be a return to the pre-Flashpoint era, that now that we're getting Cyborg Superman now, or?
I was thinking that with the Trinity War as well, because I know that's going to affect all the Justice League titles and whether or not that's going to have a backdoor into the previous continuity. But I don't know, because Hank Henshaw has been in Team 7, which is a title that's set in the past within that 5-year gap.
Yeah.
He played a scientist who was in advanced robotics. He was with Caitlin Fairchild, who became a Ravager.
Oh yeah, and she was in the Superboy books, Caitlin Fairchild.
Big Red, and she's he died in that. Spoilers. alien virus made him into like some weird bioorganic twisted monstrosity.
Yeah,
and stroke killed him, and so I don't know how they're going to morph him into this. Because the old Superman, well, the old Cyborg Superman was a NASA astronaut whose team got hit by, I think it was radiation waves, much like the Fantastic Four, and then fought Superman when their powers manifested, and he died, and then he was back. His consciousness was grafted, and he was brought back as this.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because I know they've said the death and return of Superman is still in continuity.
Apparently. I don't know how it could be still in continuity, but
it's got to be within that 5-year period, hasn't it?
Yeah, it had to have been.
Yeah, so if that's the case, then he's died at the right time, so it could line up with now. It's just going to be interesting to see why he's decided to take the guise of Superman.
Right.
Because his death didn't have anything to do with Superman in this new continuity, but the old one, it did.
Yeah, very much.
But yeah, I think it's good. I mean, if they can bring Cyborg Superman back, surely they can bring back the other characters that people want to see.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I think this is just a step towards, who knows, maybe another Death of Superman storyline with Doomsday. That would be an interesting story to revisit, although I know Death of Superman fans would be an outrage if they redid that storyline.
Yeah, I think it's of its time, but I think you could do it a different way. I mean, I thought when they done Reign of Doomsday back in the pre-Flashpoint continuity, I thought they might try and retread the same ground they did with the Death and Return, but they didn't. It was just a twist, so maybe they can do something big. As big as that was to encompass all the titles and make him vital cog in the DC universe again, and but just put a different spin on it this time.
Yeah, but it's possible.
The last couple of issues of Grant Morrison's Action Run had sort of like a Doomsday-like character that was trying to kill him, and that referenced his death in there. So I don't know. It's always difficult when you're trying to redo a very classic storyline. It's very precarious, because that brought a lot of people to the character. It brought me in, so.
Yeah, it's actually one of the first storylines I started collecting when I even became a Superman fan. I collected, I think it was the re, it was oh, what was it? It wasn't the Return. It was the Reign of the Superman storyline, and I've just collected more and more. I mean, I just got my hands last year on Superman 75. It's been hard finding those specific issues. Every time I go to the comic shop, I look, and it's been hard to find those in the back issue bins, because a lot of the back issue bins has the newer stuff, normal pre-Flashpoint, not necessarily of the 90s era of Superman. So that's kind of a bit difficult. But now if they redo the death, I know a lot of people are going to be angry. So, I mean, I specifically wouldn't be angry, but I know those people who grew up on that storyline might be. So, but who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
I think it'd be interesting if we had Steel come back and Eradicator.
Oh, yes. That would be awesome.
Characters. I know John Henry Irons was in a few issues of Grant Morrison's Action Run, but he's not been in it since.
Yeah.
And that is, he's such a rich character that the DC would be remiss not to bring him back.
Did he don his Steel suit?
He did, but it wasn't the Steel suit that we all know.
Oh, yeah.
Design. He didn't have the cape, I think. It had sort of like kind of like pipes.
Yeah.
So like Cable from the X-Men.
Yeah.
So kind of like those, kind of like piping, for lack of a better term, or if you ever watched The Giver, which is a manga TV show and comic series, they had this weird tentacle, metal tentacle things that used to latch onto a person to create the suit. That's what it kind of reminded me of. And he still had his hammer, though. And he was still a very intelligent scientist.
Very good. That's awesome.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. No, for sure. It should definitely be interesting. But that's really all I had for news. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with the first issue of this episode to cover, which is going to be Action Comics number 19. Stay tuned, everybody.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The New 52 Adventures of Superman.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Kara-Zor Podcast,
The Superman Vidcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and Radio KAL from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Danny Sapp,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
And welcome back, everybody. Action Comics number 19, titled Hybrid Part 1. The credits on this one is Andy Diggle is the writer, Tony S. Daniel is the penciler, Bat is the inker, Tomu Mori is the colorist, Carlos M. Mangle is the letterer, Daniel, Bat, and Mori did the cover, the associate editor is Rick Purdin, and Eddie Braganza is the editor. I'm going to toss this over to you, Stephen. What did you think of this issue, man?
That. I was in two minds about it because it was really good, but it was also really bittersweet because Andy Diggle brings Action Comics to what it should be, which is delivering top high octane quality action with some great character work, but disappointing at the same time because he's leaving after the next issue. So he's not going to continue this great run that I thought he was going to have when he first signed onto the book. But that hasn't marred what the title is for me, to be honest, because it was still just a great reading experience, and it was great to see a more consistent art team on there since Rags, Morales, and Brad Walker used to be the old art team. You could tell that their styles were similar but very different. Rags was more cartoony, and Brad Walker was a little bit more real, worldish. I thought Tony Daniels' art was great and dynamic, and he's got a good take on Superman, and he can do action scenes extremely well. But what about you? What did you think?
This is my very first Action Comics issue. I mean, as everybody knows, and I've made it abundantly abundantly clear, it seems like. I'm not a huge fan of Grant Morrison. I was excited when Andy Diggle was announced as the writer. Now, I thought he did I knew his run was going to be cut short, but I thought he did at least a 5-issue story arc. Is that not true?
No, it's 3. According to all the reports I've read, it's issue 19, 20, and 21.
Oh, okay.
The point is he's plotted out the first 3 issues, so they're going to be used, and then Tony Daniel is going to script Andy Diggle's plots, because Tony Daniel used to write Batman.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's right, he did.
R.I.P., he done Cowell, and then when the reboot happened, he got a good issue, I think it was 12 issues and an annual on Detective.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I absolutely love this issue. I really felt that Andy really got these characters from Lois to Clark. I love seeing Diana in this issue. I was just really impressed with the story. Like you said, it's really bittersweet because, I mean, I love this issue. But at the same time, I'm sad because Andy Diggle is going to leave within, like you said, a 3-issue arc, and that kind of bummed me out. Because I was really excited to start reading this. And then I think it was like 2 or 3 days after it was announced that Andy Diggle was going to be the writer that he decided to leave. So, I mean, that really just bummed me out because I was looking forward to his run on Action.
But, yeah, DC Editorial strikes again there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it was DC Editorial or if it was his decision.
Well, I know Steve Eunice on the Superman homepage. They do a podcast. He brought up the subject on their last show as to whether or not writers are becoming, think they're bigger than the characters that they're hired to write for. Hmm. It's like story mind in line, and if they can't get to do what they want, then they are leaving the title when a company is paying them probably a decent amount of money to write for one of their biggest characters, and they can't fall in line with what the editorial mandate will be.
Yeah.
Do you think creators are getting bigger than the characters now, or do you think the characters will always outshine a creator?
You know, I'm not one-sided on this. I'm more like two-sided because I love these creators. I think DC Editorial needs to give these creators a little bit more leeway and not be so rigid with their dogma as far as what they want in stories and stuff. I mean, let's be honest, that's probably why Mike Johnson left the Supergirl title, was because of DC Editorial not letting him do what the heck he wanted to do with the character. I mean, he made that character what it is today. So, I mean, I just think DC Editorial needs to take a step back and realize and give these creators license to do what they want to do with these characters and not be so tight-fisted.
Yeah, well, for everyone I've read from creators who've left DC amidst the new regime, they've always said that the DC doesn't know what they want, is that they've agreed to a plot and then 3 months later have decided to change their mind and they want something completely different, necessitating page one rewrites. So I think it's more of a they're not confident in what they've bought more than they've got a set mandate they want to see character. I think they just need to be a little bit more hands off and trust the people that they're employing to do a good job and stop being so hands on.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely, I agree.
Need to manage, but also just have the confidence in the people that you're appointing for these positions to follow through and do the job that you know they can do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You said Andy Diggle's take on the character was well done. I thought the scene in the bar between Lois and Clark was exceptional.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Was palatable from them. It's just effortless, and it brought me back to when they were married back in before the Flashpoint, and that's where it just reminded me of that. That's the couple that I've always that they belong together.
Yeah,
should never be But it's interesting to see them on the journeys they're on now with Lois from with John Carroll and Clark with Diana. But I do think that John Carroll's kind of like a Clark Kent-like substitute when you look at him. He's just a blonde version of Clark Kent in Lois's eyes because he seems to have the same characteristics and morals as Clark, but just no powers.
Right. Do you think Lois knows that Clark is Superman?
Probably. I think she might have suspicions because, as he said, particularly in Superman 8-19, where Clark and John Carroll have a chat, he says that he's Lois Lane's best friend, and best friends know everything about each other.
Hmm.
I think there's something there that she may suspect a little subconsciously, but I don't know. If she does know, she's sitting on the story of a century, which proves how much she cares about him. But if she doesn't know it, then you've got that sense of fun, of that fun of the character that comes with dual identities. But for a reporter of her caliber, I think, you know, she should suspect something. Because when Clark disappears and Superman always turns up, they're not together at the same time. You know, that would put suspicions. That'd flag up my suspicions if I was her.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I wanted to go back to Tony Daniels' artwork. You know, I was really, really impressed with Daniels' artwork. I mean, I loved how he drew Clark. I loved how he drew Lois. I was just really, really impressed. I love the fact that Diana looks awesome. Really, really impressed with his art style. Even more so than people like Rocafort or Mahmoud Asrar. I was just really, really impressed with his Superman, and probably will follow him probably wherever he goes if he decides to stay with the Superman title. Or not after Tony leaves, or not Tony, but Andy, after Andy leaves. I have no idea what's going to happen with the art team once we get a new writer in here.
Tony Daniels leaving the title with Andy Diggle because he's got a huge project with DC in the works.
Gotcha.
It's always been a 3-issue plan for Tony Daniels to be on there for 3 issues. Well, yeah, I think he's got a great style. It's very clean line. It's very classic when you think of superheroes. They're that kind of drawing that you remember. I don't think he's like Kurt Swan or Jose La Garcia Lopez, praise be his name. I don't think
yes,
that fantastic style that suits this story. And do you read Justice League at all?
I've read a few issues of Justice League. I've read maybe the first 3 or 4.
Well, he had a 3 or 2 issue arc in between Ivan Reese and Joe Prado joining for a Throne of Atlantis. And it was more of a Wonder Woman cheetah centric storyline. And he just does a phenomenal job with that as well. So you definitely should check those issues out.
Yeah, I definitely will. Another thing about, not really the story, but the art style, it looks like Clark is wearing the Harry Potter glasses in this story. That's what it really reminded me of. I don't know about what you saw in that, sir.
Yeah, and he looked a bit small for his face.
Yeah.
That style didn't really suit him. You could tell it was Superman underneath glasses, where I think the rimmed ones hide his features a little more. But that's just because I wear glasses to read. And
okay.
I had about when I started. I know. I'm not like fucking big, thick, black rim one.
Yeah, I actually wear glasses all the time. I mean, they're smaller. They're smaller by any means. I don't want something huge and gaudy on my face. But, I mean, for Clark, I mean, he doesn't need glasses to see, obviously. I mean, he's got X-ray and heat vision, for crying out loud. So, I mean, I'd like to see a little bit more better than like a Harry Potter style glasses, but I mean, I'm willing to accept it. I mean, it wasn't a huge deal for me. So,
no, I think that kind of things differ from artist to artist, don't they? Same with, like, clothing.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like a uniform that they have to wear. You know, the different artist interpretation of their accessories always differ. But, again, I don't really have problems with it.
Yeah.
But, again, I think it was good to note that the story's now jumped ahead in the timeline, because Action Comics was, like, 5 years before the current continuity, and now I think it's only a year behind Superman, Superboy, and Supergirl.
Yeah. Yeah, the actual timeline of this issue kind of threw me for a loop a little bit, because I wasn't sure, because I had not been reading Action. I mean, I had heard that there might be a five, or I knew there was a five-year time difference, but I couldn't remember which title it was, whether it was Superman that was behind or whether it was Action that was behind. So that kind of confused me and took me out of the story a little bit, but not too much at all. So
yeah, well, Action Justice League were the two titles that were 5 years behind everyone. And then after the first arc of Justice League, that jumped forward to the regular time, just leaving Grant Morrison his corner of the universe to play with, so we didn't have to interact with the other characters.
Right.
Because I think if the other titles were in the same timeline, then that huge story he was trying to tell with Mixoplex and Vindictivix would encompass Supergirl and Superboy and bring them into that craziness that he was doing, whereas because he was 5 years behind everyone else, he just had his own title to play with and he didn't have the constrictions of what was established continuity.
Right.
But it's good to see that it's all, you know, Action is almost catching up to the regular title. But I would have preferred Action to remain like a Golden Age book, to be honest, because I really like that Golden Age Superman costume. Because I think, because you get that suit now, much like in Man of Steel, where it looks like it's a Kryptonian, it looks like a battle armor, but it's missing his suit. So it's like a jumpsuit, and then like the accessories or the battle armament goes over that costume in Man of Steel.
Yeah.
The Superman costume now is very connected to his Kryptonian heritage, whereas when he's 19, 20, he's just cobbling his own suit together, much like kids do when they're trying to be Superman. They just get like a red towel and a blue t-shirt and
right,
the image embedded into the t-shirt, then that's great. And if they don't have the emblem, then they just, like me, I drew my own emblem and stuck it onto my blue t-shirt.
Hold on a second, Steven. Yeah? You are? Okay, we'll see. Okay. Okay. I won't forget about it. Sorry, that was my sister. Now I know you've said you've not been a huge fan of this Superman shield morphing into the suit. I actually don't mind that all that much, considering it's easy. I think it's easier to hide a secret identity. I would prefer that the suit be worn underneath Clark's clothes, but I actually don't mind this whole shield suit idea.
Yeah, it's just, I think, coming from an established, like a very old school approach to like him having a suit that he wears under his clothes in all the interpretations of Superman I've ever seen, it's taken some getting used to, but I am coming around to the idea now, because as you said, it's much easier to hide the secret identity. Because you can just wear that one t-shirt and the one Superman S emblem and that's it, and then you can just have a suit at will.
Right.
It's probably more. I would like to see it revert back to the classic Super. That's never going to happen, but I am embracing it as much as I can.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a really cool idea, to be sure. It actually kind of, I don't know if you ever watched Spider-Man Unlimited.
No, I've never seen that one. That's the only.
Basically, the suit manifests from a watch, and it's microscopic robots. It's a really cool idea. Just a really great show for a very short amount of episodes. But that's what it kind of reminds me of, is like the Superman suit's made up of microscopic robots that are stemming from his shield, which is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. again, it also works very well for new audiences as well, because it takes away that hokiness level of, well, if someone just rips open his t-shirt or rips open his shirt, they can see that he's got a Superman costume, so he's obviously Superman. Whereas right. this new version, anything was to happen to any of his clothes for whatever reason, then he's not going to automatically be out of the Superman.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
The clothes got burnt off, his suit's underneath, because the suit's a Kryptonian material, so it's invulnerable.
Right.
Yeah. What did you think about Lex Luthor being included in the story?
I thought Lex was I wasn't surprised to see Lex in this story. Lex Luthor's not in jail at this time, correct? He's still very much a part of the world.
He's still very much out yet because
yeah.
He's in jail in the current continuity, which is right. Like a year or 2 years ahead of this title.
Right. Yeah, I thought his interactions with the people he was interacting with was extremely interesting. The way he has got the doctor incarcerated, that was very interesting. I get that she's very much a prisoner, and we definitely see that Lex Luthor's crazy in this story. I mean, the Lex Luthor I know of wouldn't really keep somebody, I mean, this is my frame of reference. I mean, I haven't read a lot of Lex stories, but I mean, the Lex Luthor from Smallville, I don't think would keep anybody incarcerated. And that's really the Lex Luthor I know. But in even the Lex Luthor of previous continuity in the post-crisis, I don't think would keep anybody hostage. But then again, maybe he would. I don't know.
Yeah, he seems to go with his control freak nature and his sociopathic tendencies to...
Oh, yeah.
All that he's trying to manipulate to tell him that he's the perfect bill of mental health when he's obviously got all of these issues that are ingrained in him, and Superman being in the world has given him a worse superiority complex.
Right.
Like, an Napoleon complex with... We used to say he only went to war because he was a short man. If he was, like, 6 foot, he could... track more girls, he'd be happier. Or the part of the Simpsons cartoon where you see Hitler working out, and the reason he hates Jews is because there was a really buff Jewish guy attracting all the women. And that was their joke, and I think it works for Lex because he's the smartest man in the world and he could probably cure a lot of ailments, but because people would see Superman as a deity, and they're not willing to follow Lex Luthor the way they're willing to follow Superman because he can do things that are extraordinary, whereas Lex is really confined to his human physiology. And I think that's where his resentment comes in.
Yeah, for sure. I did like the part of the story where he's basically planning kryptonite on Superman, and it seems like the kryptonite infection is spreading almost like a, I don't know, coat around him or something like that, changing his body. I mean, we obviously see the kryptonite is morphing his hand into something at the end of this issue. So, I mean, I kind of like that. How about you? What did you think of that?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting because it's reacting to his obviously alien biology. So, what is inside of his body that's causing this reaction with kryptonite to happen, or what else is in that device he's implanted in him, and is it going to be like he's going to turn him into a rampaging monster to show people the destruction he's capable of if he's, you know, not tethered and not confined to report to governments? I think it's just more part of Lex Luthor trying to turn the public against Superman and show how dangerous and potentially dangerous he could be.
Right.
Because you do. But the Lex that we know in the current like Superman, the Superman 19, that continuity, he's still not got his facial scar.
Right. No, he hasn't.
Still wondering who's going to tell that story, if that's going to be something Scott Lobdell is going to address, or if something that Action Comics is going to do. because I want to know, that seems to have ignited further hatred towards him, because Lex Luthor is sort of like the pinnacle of a human, because he's so clever and he's got a high opinion of himself, so his vanity would be something he takes extremely seriously, and now he's got a blemish on that, and Superman is impervious, he'll never get a scar, he'll never die, he doesn't bleed, so he'll always be perfect, whereas Lex Luthor's now a little bit more twisted, and I like that aspect that's been introduced, but I want to know how that came about. I want to see that story, so I hope it's something that gets addressed in the future. If it ever does, I think I'd be disappointed, but you just live with it, because that's the nature of comics. Everything's not going to be explained.
Right.
But I'd really like to know what that story behind the scar is, because I thought maybe Grant Morrison might address that in the last pages of Action, because Lex fought Superman in his mecha suit, but like a robot version of his mecha suit. So he was inside a big device fighting him, and I thought maybe that's when he'd get a scar, but with this storyline, obviously, he hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Lex Luthor's scar in the Superman titles almost seems like Superman burned him with his heat vision. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if that is going to happen eventually. Who knows? But
anything's possible in this continuity, to be honest, mate.
Yeah, anything. Anything is possible. But
I hope it's gone on previously, so I hope it's something as interesting as that. Superman to do something so abhorrent and to physically scar another person, because that's something that's not in his character.
Yeah, I really don't want to see that either, because I think that would leave a huge blemish on Superman's, not only himself personally, but his career. I mean, and Lex Luthor would even just have more firepower to throw at him if he did.
Yeah, it'd be only interesting if the story had the high stakes that would cause him to do something like that, that it had, there was no other way of stopping Luthor. I honestly just don't know what it is, but it is one of those intriguing aspects of Lex that I hope is addressed soon. But it's good fodder for discussion if it's not.
Right. really, just overall, I love this issue. I'm sad that Andy Daigle's leaving. And won't get to finish or start his arc. But I mean, I guess that's just the nature of the beast in comics these days. But I will be anxious to see who they get to come after Andy. I know Scott Lobdell's gonna have an arc in Action. I'm not overly thrilled about that. As long as Kenneth Rocafort's not coming with him over to Action, that would please me. But I guess, I mean, it is what it is, and we'll just have to move forward, and I'm looking forward to more issues of Action Comics for sure.
Same, yeah, I think you need a big team to come on to the title, to carry it forward, to get the sales up, to make Superman a vital character particularly this year when he's got a big film coming out on his 75-year anniversary. They need someone of a Jim Lee, Scott Snyder level, even if it's just for 6 issues or for 12 issues, something that's going to generate a lot of excitement.
Right.
And to get what to pick the title. I think that's mainly what Marvel's doing correct, is it's giving the big titles to big, high-concept writers that get people excited to read their stories. And I think that's what Superman needs. I think Scott Snyder's Superman title is a great complement to Action. The first book he appeared in, that needs to be like the top title in the Superman family, and it needs that big creative team to get people jazzed about the character.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you there, sir. But that's really all I had. I don't know if you had anything else.
No, that's all I've got as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about Superboy 19. Stay tuned, everybody.
Sawate. My name is Stella, and I am the host of Batgirl to Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast. Batgirl to Oracle is a podcast and site dedicated to Barbara Gordon, the first woman to hold the Batgirl mantle for an extended period of time, roughly 1967 to 1985. The goal of BTO is to examine the character's history from her first appearance as Batgirl and continue on through her current tenure as Oracle. Each episode looks at vintage issues of Detective Comics and Batman and modern issues of Batgirl and Birds of Prey. I also keep track of news involving Batgirl and other members of the Bat family, and I examine Barbara Gordon's appearances in the media, such as TV, film, etc. I've been blessed to be able to interview writer Brian Q. Miller, and I hope to interview more creators and actors in the future. My goal, most importantly, is to make a fun, entertaining, and thoughtful show that people enjoy and from which they learn. Please visit us online at batgirltooracle.net and look for us on iTunes. Thank you.
Yeah, and welcome back, everybody. Superboy 19, titled... Do you know the title on this, Steven? I didn't write it all down.
That's okay.
Is it Gone But Not Forgotten?
Gone But Not Forgotten.
Yeah.
Nope, forgotten. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that's the title. I completely dropped the ball on that. The credits on this issue, Scott Lobdell is the writer. I can't even pronounce this guy's first name. Diogenes Neves?
Neves, yeah. Diogenes Neves.
And Arby Silva are the pencilers. Vicente, I can't even pronounce that last name. Let's just call him Vicente. And Rob Lean are the inkers. Richard and Tanya Horry are the colorists. Travis Lenham is the letterer. Adam Seoff, Jamie Mendoza, and Blonde did the cover. Ricky Perndon is the associate editor, and Eddie Braganza is the group editor. Man, that's a long credits. Holy moly. What did you think about this issue, Steven? Did you like it, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a story in the wide sense. It's more of like a montage of Scott Lobdell wrapping up his 2-year run on Superboy. Because he's using this final issue to plug in some holes of previous stories and to finally reveal Khan's DNA and to see who he's made up from. Because from issue 1, they said he was a clone of Superman and then mixed in with someone else. Back in the crossover with the Hell on Earth, which I know you and Danny weren't really fans of, when Hell was ripping him apart, he said there was 3 DNA mixes. There was a human, a Kryptonian, and an unknown one. And now we finally get the origin of the unknown one, which was a nice reveal. And it's completely different from what the pre-Flashpoint Superboy was, because he was just a straight clone of Superman and Lex Luthor. And now they've gone completely in a different direction and an interesting direction and a great fodder for stories going forward. But what did you think?
You know, this issue was really weird for me because I haven't been reading Superboy all along. I picked up the first issue back when it was first released, when it hit like 99 cents on the DC app or the Comixology app. I read it. It didn't really affect me one way or the other. I wasn't a huge fan of this Superboy title, but the Hell on Earth crossover kind of made me a fan of this character. And that was one good thing about the Hell on Earth crossover that I did enjoy. You know, it was just kind of blah to me. Because I'm not a huge Scott Lobdell fan. I don't know. It just felt. I guess it was a good wrap-up to what he's been doing. It kind of explains Superboy's origin a little bit. I'm not sure I like the whole... I mean, it was a nice reveal at the end, but I'm not sure I like the whole... that the only reason for Superboy's existence is to save some other like... Not really a clone, but Superman and Lois Lane's son from the future. I mean, I don't like that. That's the only reason Superboy exists. Is to save this other Superboy. So, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was a weird issue for me with all the time travel stuff. But, so yeah, there's that, I suppose.
Is confusing if you really, really think about it. Does it all line up?
Yeah.
But I like that he's, cause Connor was, even from issue one of the new series, he's always been described as a weapon.
Right.
Arbus was doing, he was trying to create a weapon, and that was his purpose. The only reason he exists is because Caitlin Fairchild saw something within him, and that was obviously the Superman Lois Lane, spoilers, DNA graft, which has given him his memories and his humanity a little bit more, and she saw that spark of life, and that's what kept him alive. Otherwise, he would have been killed like all the other clones before him.
Right.
But what I like about this issue is we finally get a characterization for Harvest, which was just a one-note villain when he was introduced. I'm a Scott Lobdell fan and an apologist for his more inconsistent work, but when he introduced the Teen Titans and Superboy, they had this underlying villain called the Harvest, who was leading up to what a crossover with Superboy, Legion, Lost, and Teen Titans called the Culling, which was just a whole mess.
Yeah, I heard it was a mess.
It was because you didn't have any motivation for Harvest. You didn't understand who this character was. He was just coming off as a generic evil person who was basically trying to find all the meta teens he could to put in an underground fortress in a volcano and create the Culling, which was kind of like Battle Royale, where these superpowered teens would fight to the death, and the survivors he would train to become the team known as the Ravagers, which was going to police the metahumans and make sure they don't get out of hand, and they don't grow too big. And if the police, they're the superheroes police in the future, that's what he wanted, but his intentions were never made clear, and if they were, it was very hackney.
Right.
And just wasn't good. And now Harvest finally is a character that we understand, and we've got some empathy with him. You know, he lost his son to a metahuman. He found the best way possible was to get Clark Kent's and Lois Lane's baby, save him from the brink of death, and then build him up and try and stabilize his DNA so he could use him as the weapon in order to save his son. I thought was a really nice shade that was missing from the Cullen. And retroactively, it's give the Cullen a little bit more importance. And now I'm going to go back and reread with this knowledge the Culling to see those moments of humanity in Harvest. And I like that, you know, Scott Lobdell got to wrap up his take on Superboy, because that's something, unfortunately, not all writers get to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the Superboy title was hit and miss, but it is worth rereading now that you're interested in the character because of the crossover, because then you get to see his origins, and there are some fun comics in there. You know, it's not earth-shattering, it's not Watchmen or anything, but it is just consistently fun.
Yeah. Now, I actually might go back and pick up some of the older Superboy issues. Because, I mean, even now, I mean, we still get references for some of the older Superboy issues, which is kind of cool. But, you know, one thing about this issue that I didn't really work for me specifically is really the fact that does Lois not know who Superman is in this time frame? I mean, we don't really know, because Clark is in his Superman suit. And I just didn't get the sense that Lois knew who he was. I mean, you would think that she would, because, I mean, they're obviously having a baby together. So, and that doesn't really work for me in and of, I mean, maybe I'm just a Lois and Clark purist, but, I mean, I don't think Kryptonian and human DNA would really mix all that well in a purely platonic state between husband and wife. I mean, I just don't think that works. Maybe that's because I'm a Lois and Clark New Adventures of Superman fan, but I mean, for me, it just didn't work. So,
I think because Superman's been depowered, maybe his biology is different than what it was, and maybe they can conceive through natural means in this continuity. But I'd like to think that Lois does know Superman as Clark Kent eventually, if they're going to have kids together and have a life.
You would think.
If you're going to if you're going to spend the rest of your life with someone, then surely you're going to tell them all of their secrets. I mean, I've been with my girlfriend for 6 years, and we know everything about each other. And there's no secrets between us whatsoever, and I think that's what this relationship needs. And I think because of the montage nature of the issue, where it's just wrapping up plot lines and giving you justification, the characterization of that moment is lost. So you do have to bring your own interpretation to it. But in my eyes, I like to think the panel that you can see them, you know, Clark really happy when he's holding, cradling his baby, and Lois looks exhausted, but you'd like to think that they're going to spend a really nice life together. They've had their kid. So the one nitpick I've got is on page 7, on the first panel, with you see John Kent fallen in his little Kryptonian suit, and Superman is Clark Kent's rushing to his aid, and you can see he's wearing jeans and a Superman t-shirt without
his
on the farm. But why would he do that? And it's interesting to note that the Superman emblem on there is the Alex Ross Kingdom Come emblem.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Because I was just looking at it and scrutinizing it as much as possible. I was like, what kind of emblem is that? And it does look like the Kingdom Come one. And it does look like the one from the Comic-Con Man of Steel teaser poster that was released a year ago with Henry Cavill in blacked out with just the S symbol.
Yeah. Let me get back to that page. Vamp for me, Steven. Oh, goodness. Let me get to there. I did not even realize that, or didn't even notice that the symbol on Superman's, there it is. Oh, yeah.
You can probably see it better because you've got better picture resolution on your iPad than I do on the paper copy.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely looks similar to the Kingdom Come, and I guess you could make a Kingdom Come reference here, and maybe that's what they're trying to go for with the flashback stuff. I don't really know. I mean, that'd be cool if that's what Scott was trying to do.
Yeah, or maybe it's just one of those art errors that we get every now and again.
Perhaps, like, yeah.
with Supergirl or Superboy, where they drew in his the underpants over the uniform, where it looked like the pre-Flashpoint suit instead of the new one now.
Yeah.
It's one of those issues. It just might be an art mistake, or it could be like a little hint for the future, because Scott Lobdell really comes from that old 80s, 90s style of comics writing, where he would drop hints to potential, or set up potential storylines that he might take like 2 or 3 years down the road to pay off. But they do get paid off, or it could just be a simple mistake that I'm reading too much into and now conveying you into my way of thinking.
No, I mean, that would be really cool if we eventually see the old suit come back, maybe because the new suit gets destroyed by kryptonite or whatever. I mean, that'd be a really interesting way to do that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think with Supergirl, when we get to it, I think the danger of reintroducing old costumes is that they're not old costumes to the new readerships that you've just obtained with the reboot, because to them, the classic costume is the costume they're wearing now.
Right.
So they know no difference. And if they're a big Superman fan, their classic costume is the Golden Age, Grant Morrison, Bruce Springsteen, punk T-shirt, jeans, and his blanket that I know you dislike.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. I cannot stand it. If it was just jeans and T-shirt, I wouldn't care. I mean, the picture of Clark running after John because he's fallen, that doesn't bother me. If he had a cape on there, that would bother me, but he doesn't. I just don't think a cape with a T-shirt and jeans works all that well. Maybe I'm just being weird about that, but I'm just not a huge fan of that. If it was just T-shirt and jeans like Connor in the old continuity, it'd be fine. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Oh yeah, no, I miss the I miss Connor's old look because I'm not really a fan of his Tron Superboy suit that he's got. I really prefer the old like classic jeans and t-shirt look. And even if he brought back his 90s bodysuit with his leather jacket and his sunglasses, that would be fine.
Yeah.
More comparable to this, or I remember when the first teaser image for the Teen Titans was released and Superboy had black pants on and a t-shirt and then a Superman tattoo and the Superman S-shield taped to his t-shirt that he drew him.
Nice. No, I had not seen that.
Did you not seen it? Well, if you Google image the first Teen Titans cover, the teaser image when they released the news that they were rebooting the universe, that was the first thing they released and people went mental. You know, it's not, I'm not a fan of the suit, but I was a fan of the issue. And like I said, because I've got the other 18 issues, well, 19 issues plus the zero issue of story. This issue to me is a great payoff for a 2-year. It's going to be exciting to see what Justin Jordan, who's the new writer of Superboy, is going to bring forward.
I'm looking forward to his run on the character of Superboy for sure.
Yeah, I'm still unsure about the direction of his book because all of the comics I've read of Justin Jordan, he seems to be not violent, but he's a very high octane action. Luther Strode is very violent, and Team 7 was very violent, and I just don't want Superboy to descend into mindless violence. I'd quite like this run of characterization that he's got since the crossover to continue, and I think, you know, Justin Jordan could probably produce great Superboy scripts, and hopefully we can have like 4 really good titles going forward, and this will be a great family of books to recommend to other people.
Oh yeah, now I see that Superboy costume. Yeah, that'd be a great Superboy costume.
Yeah, isn't it good?
It really is good.
Because it feels like homemade, like Clark's original Action Comics costume.
Yeah, no, I like that actually way better than the Tron outfit that he's wearing.
Yeah, it's just interesting that they didn't. I was always wondered why they didn't have that suit.
Yeah.
Him to evolve into that suit. Like, this is obviously his birth matrix suit, for lack of a better term, for Superboy, and then he would grow into that suit that was designed by Brett Booth for him, but
yeah,
they've obviously liked this look better than that one.
Right. Well, it's his Project Nowhere suit, that's for sure.
Exactly, Project Nowhere suit.
Yeah, so... Well, I don't have any more notes on this issue. I don't know about you, sir.
No. That's me done on that issue as well, sir.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back with Supergirl number 19. Stay tuned, everybody.
Do you enjoy time travel in general and the Silver Age of comic books in particular? If so, join me each week on the Superman Fan Podcast. My name is Billy Hogan, and I will be your host. Together, we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. One week, we will take a look at the Superman family of titles, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, World's Finest Comics, and soon, Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. The next week, we will feature the Man of Steel's titles, Superman and Action Comics, which will include the Supergirl stories during her run in the back of that title. You can join me each week on Wednesday or Thursday at the supermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com, which is available on iTunes. And your emails are always welcome at supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape.
And welcome back, everybody. Supergirl 19, titled The Girl of Tomorrow Meets the Woman of Steel in Superpower. The credits on this one are Mike Johnson is the writer, Mahmoud Asrar did the pencils and inks. Marlo Aliqua did pages 13 through 15, 17 and 20. Dave McKay did the colors. Rob Lee did the letters. Mahmoud Asrar and Daniel Brown did the cover. Ricky Purdin is the associate editor, and Eddie Braganza is the editor. I'm going to throw this over to you, Steven. What did you think of Supergirl 19, man?
Cool. It was it's a complete polar opposite, I think, to Superboy 19 in terms of you've got another writer that's leaving the title and is unfortunately not been given the opportunity to have a final say or wrap any of his storylines that he's had ongoing over the last 2 years. And I think it's a real missed opportunity that Mike Johnson didn't get the chance, like Scott Lobdell did, to find some resolution to the storylines that he'd set up, much like Siobhan and her brother, because they were a big factor in Kara's life since they met each other. You know, Siobhan was the only person Kara could communicate with because she could speak Kryptonian with her affinity for languages, and Kara started to have a budding romance with Siobhan's brother when he escaped the clutches of the Banshee, which is their dad. Having said that, I thought the art was superb. Mahmoud Asrar is probably one of the best artists working in the medium today. His line work is top notch. The only problem I did have with his art, and it's not on this issue, it's his Superman face is very strange. It's off model compared to what Kenneth Rockford drew and what Jesus Marino drew when he first came onto the Superman title with George Pérez, and what Rags Morales drew. But for its weakness in story, it made up for in its really good high-octane action. I thought the Lex Luthor segment was superfluous. Didn't really add anything to the story other than he's trying to get a better sense of Kara's power set for some unknown reason. And hopefully Michael Alan Nelson, who's taken over the scripting duties from Johnson, is going to address some of these plot lines going forward with his arc. But what I did like is the interaction between Supergirl and Power Girl. I think the issue brilliantly subverts the typical superhero team-up where they have to have a misunderstanding and they have to have a fight before they realize they're being manipulated.
Yeah.
I love it that they work together because essentially they are the same person from different worlds. And I also like the little Back to the Future one-page montage where the image Power Girl and Supergirl merged and you see their two histories in the background. And that way they can share memories and they know everything about each other's backstories on that one page. So you didn't need a whole issue of exposition. It was just masterfully done on that side. But it did lack a little bit of a typical Mike Johnson, Michael Green characterization, which has been a staple of this title since issue one. It's going to be very sorry to see Mike go, but I hope he keeps with DC Comics. I hope they bring him back. I hope if they give him an annual to play with, that he can resolve some of his storylines. Overall, it was for me, I know you and Danny were really high on the title, particularly after issue 18, which was sort of like a fill-in from last issue. I did like that this one gave a little bit more of better conclusion to Hell on Earth, even with a little one or two mention with a Kryptonian poison. I thought it was much better handled. It was handled much better here than it was in the previous issue. Why I did like issue 18, issue 19 just doesn't really have a point to me, apart from introducing Kara to Karen and seeing their dynamic.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair statement. You know, I understand where you're coming from. I really do. And it you're right. I mean, it almost like this the point was just to bring in Karen. For what reason? I mean, there wasn't really much of a reason for to bring in Karen than just to save Supergirl's butt. And I mean, she's obviously in trouble with the kryptonite poisoning. But, I mean, I like the interaction between these two. I have always liked the interaction between these two. I like seeing the new suit. It was nice to see Sanctuary in this issue again.
Of course, yes. Great Fortress of Solitude for her. And it always reminds me of the 80s Supergirl film, because her, the Ark City was under the water at the end of that film.
When yes. She
was underwater, and I really like that Sanctuary is under the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think to correlate those two, but you are correct, sir, that there's definitely a correlation, because you're right, her spaceship was underwater in that movie.
It was. And I really liked them. Like you said, I thought Power Girl's appearance was superfluous, but it was really well done, and it was consistent with World's Finest, which I also read, which is the Huntress Power Girl team up book.
And yeah.
Joke in that series is that Karen always trashes all of her costumes.
Which yes.
But yeah. Now it's great to, well, I don't know if it's a wink to the fans that the one suit that's going to be indestructible is the sex, quote unquote, sexist suit with the boob window that.
Yeah.
And they were loving that, you know, Power Girl had some modesty in the New 52. And I think this is just DC's playful way of saying, here's a classic, well, I hate to say classic look, because not to be nitpicky about it, Power Girl's classic suit is the Supergirl suit from Earth 2.
Right, yeah, that's true. That is her classic suit, and I have a feeling we're going to see that come back in issue 20. Because, yeah. I mean, it's sitting right on the cover, so I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it come back.
Although with DC's strange editorial department, sometimes the cover they solicit isn't the cover we end up with.
That's true, too.
Previous issues, much like Frank Hanna and Robertson, who
yeah.
done it.
Yeah, no, I mean, at this point, I really don't trust DC with their solicitations. I've come to expect bad things about DC and their solicitation department.
I think the thing about comics is that you have to solicit something 3 months in advance, and if something changes, then you're locked into that. And the only way people find out it's different is the day it comes out.
Yeah.
But it was a disappointing end for Mike Johnson. I thought he deserved better.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he deserved better, but I mean, it still was an enjoyable issue for me personally, because it was just nice. It was just nice to enjoy a Supergirl issue for me after this Hell on Earth crossover, which has been so bad in my humble opinion. And I don't know if you share that opinion, whether or not you like the Hell on Earth crossover or not.
I like elements and. That what it introduced, it brought all the Superman family titles together for the first time, and that really reminds me of my Halcyon days of reading the Superman titles in the 90s, where they had the Shield numbering, where every issue bled into Superman, Supergirl, Adventures of Superman,
yeah.
And then eventually Steel was involved in it, and I thought that was great to bring the Superman family together, because they'd been so distant since the relaunch. But yeah, I thought Supergirl's character was given a little bit of a short shrift. Although, because I've got sisters who make questionable choices when it comes to their love lives sometimes.
Ah, yes.
You can see Kara was under the spell of a quote-unquote bad boy, but she's really dealing with... She grew up on Krypton, so I can understand her wanting to go back to that, because she wants a family and friends. Cal was a baby when he left Krypton, so he had no life there. His life was on Earth. That's why he wanted to save it. I like that dynamic, but it was never fully explored in either the Superman title when Kara came in, or in Kara's own title, which is not because he was telling a great story throughout the Hell on Earth crossover. And like you said, it brought Connell into the fray and gave him a better characterization. And, you know, you got to see him see what a true hero is within Superman. And from all the panels I could see, it was like a big brother, little brother relationship. And you could see that Con was looking up to Superman and sort of taking mental notes on how to conduct himself
yeah.
when with, with the government and we were dealing with Lex Luthor. And I thought that was a great thing to bring into the title. I thought Hell was a pretty weak villain, and his powers seemed to change from issue to issue. There was no set rule for him. But I liked the end just because I was intrigued to know what that story is.
Hmm.
Because it was teased that, I think it was Tony Daniel that teased the Superman on Krypton. Oh no, sorry, it was Scott Lobdell in issue zero. And Kenneth Rockefeller, they had Kal-El on Krypton watching his father, watching essentially the story of issue zero.
Yeah.
So I was always intrigued by that aspect, so I hope they revisit the Hell on Earth storyline in terms of on Krypton. I want to see how he meets up with Jor-El. And because now it's a time travel story and he's ahead of what's happening, and Hell has not met Jor-El yet and has gone away and transformed into this baddie, I'd like to see how Hell, the present Hell, affects
the past Hell.
Past Hell on Krypton now, and how, and whether or not he's going to let himself become that monster. I don't know. Because I don't know if he'll ever explore that again, or whether it was just a last gasp attempt to just trying to generate some positive buzz about the crossover from so
many.
Yeah,
I mean, from everything that I've read online, it's like people have not liked this Hell on Earth crossover at all. So I'm not sure. I mean, DC doesn't really give a rip about their fans, but at the same time, I would think that this Hell on Earth, they've got to know that this Hell on Earth crossover was not a big seller.
Yeah, I think it got more eyes on their ancillary titles. I think all crossovers, no matter what, get people's interest and get their eyes on it. And I know Danny Spears, that Supergirl, will be cancelled by DC because of falling sales, because he felt that the characterization was so mangled in the crossover that people just wouldn't pick it up again. But as we've seen with Green Arrow, who is a title I read, his characterization from the new DC 52 wasn't very good. J.T. Krull, who wrote a really good pre-Flashpoint Green Arrow, just really didn't bring his A-game. Ollie wasn't relatable like he was previously. He was just more abrasive and brat-like, and his supporting cast was okay. But he didn't have a really good handle on him. And it wasn't until Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino came in and they sort of performed a reboot within the same numbering and sort of took away the elements that people didn't enjoy of Green Arrow and sort of made it more streamlined and gave him a better personality. So I don't think DC would necessarily cancel Supergirl. I think what they would do is strip away elements they feel didn't work within the title and perform sort of a reboot within the same numbering. So we keep the same issues. We keep the current issue in. So if it happens, and like when Mike Allen Nelson takes over, if he decides like Siobhan and her brother is not an element he wants going forward, he can just replace them with other elements, but keep the numbering and try and build a more relatable Kara, or try and recapture that lightning in a bottle that Mike Johnson and Mike Green gave to her when she first crash landed on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up some really good points. And I mean, as we have seen, obviously writers would do whatever the heck they want to with the character, regardless of what the last writer has done. I mean, this may be the last time we see some of the certain elements like Siobhan and her bro, or Sanctuary, or something like that. It just depends on what Michael Allen Nelson does. I'll be interested to see what he does, but I mean, my hopes aren't too high. That way I don't get disappointed if it doesn't pan out and it's not all that good.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping Mike Allen Nelson is a good writer.
I am too, for sure.
I've never read any of his work, but his 28 Days Later comic based on the film always got really good reviews for the story as well as the art. He wasn't the artist on it, but Declan Shelby, who's a good artist for Marvel, used to draw the title, and that brought my attention to it. But hopefully, you know, DC's got to see something in him to give him the job.
Right.
He's got to have the best take out of the bunch, really. You'd hope that they pick the best take and not someone they can just control more.
Right.
But I didn't know who Mike Johnson and Michael Green were, apart from their great Superman-Batman run that they had with Shane Davis, and then they brought little versions of Superman and Batman to meet the little Justice League to meet the big Justice League, and it was part tale, and it was extremely funny and cute, and Batman was always angry, and Superman was always overly noble. It reminds me of the JL8 web comic series that started like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Just a great way for... It's a great series, but that was my only experience with the two Mikes.
Yeah.
When they took the title over, I was just a huge fan of them, and I will follow them wherever they do in comics.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I will too. So yeah, that's pretty much what all I really had to say about Supergirl. I don't know if you have anything else, man, or
no. But I would say if your listeners are curious to what you thought, then they should be really listening to Kara Zor-El.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I guess we'll have to plug that show, even though Danny's not a big Superman fan. Yes, if you want to hear me and Danny's rambling on Supergirl, you can head on over to KaraZor-El.com and check that out over there. So you're not going to hear a lot of Supergirl on this show only because Danny and I cover it over there. So... But I just wanted to do this as a special occasion just because Steven's here. So, goodness.
You plug all your shows during Kara Zor-El, so.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I could plug Danny's every once in a while.
Of course you can. It's nice synergy.
Yeah, even though he really doesn't care if I do or not. Oh, goodness. So... All right, well, I think that's we're going to take another little quick break, and then we're going to come back with Superman 19. Stay tuned, everybody.
You are cordially invited to attend a podcast that observes the unfolding events of history. Come with me and observe the birth and growth of a legend. From the pages of a 10-cent pulp comic book to the newspapers, radio program adventures, theatrical films, and more. Witness the dawn of the superhero. Golden Age Superman, available on iTunes and at goldenagesuperman.libsyn.com. Every legend has a beginning.
And welcome back, everybody. This Superman 19, titled Look Who's Flying to Dinner. The credits on this one is Scott Lobdell's the writer, Kenneth Rocafort is the artist, Rob Lee is the letterer, Bond is the colorist. I wonder if that's James Blonde or James. It's actually Blonde, not Bond, but it'd be funny if it was James Bond, but it's not. The cover was Kenneth Rocafort, John Caldwell, and Carrie Strachan. I think this is how you pronounce it.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Actually, Carrie Strachan and John Caldwell did the Mad variant cover. And the assistant editor was Anthony Marquez, and Eddie Braganza was the editor. I'm going to throw this over to you, Stephen. What did you think of Superman 19?
Okay. Well, on my initial read, I thought the characterization of Jimmy and Lois were extremely off, to the point where I went back, instead of reading the entire issue, I went back to read the introduction pages to the party scene. And I could see the dialogue was quite awkward, and Jimmy gawking at Diana when she entered and saying, "Can I have your babies?" I thought that's kind of a little bit out of Jimmy Olsen's character a bit.
Mm.
When you read the entire issue and you realize that Hector Hammond is psychonically, is that right?
Yeah, or something like that. Psychokinetically, I think.
Psychokinetically, yeah, is influencing them because his consciousness is out of his body. It makes perfect sense that he's affecting it. And then it also ties into last issue where people were jumping off the building. And yeah. So on the reread, it just, everything lines up and it's very consistent. And I thought it was a really fun issue because then it was about, instead of being awkward, it's what these characters are thinking, they're actually saying, because Hector Hammond is in their minds and bringing what they're thinking to the forefront instead of being polite and disguising it. And I like that aspect of people always say, in certain situations, they say things, they think things they would never say.
Right.
And then it's got that nice little reversal.
Yeah, for sure.
Awkward when you first read it?
I actually liked this issue a lot, my first read through. I was confused with all the Hector Hammond stuff. Hector Hammond is a Green Lantern villain. Am I right about that? Is that correct?
Yeah, he's one of Green Lantern's primary villains. He was actually as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of Hector Hammond in this issue, only because he's a Green Lantern villain, not a Superman villain. I like the fact that at the very beginning of this issue, Superman was battling these Red Sun-induced villains and basically just froze them all and just chucked them into space. I kind of liked that. I don't know if that was a kinetically induced by Hector Hammond or not. It very well might have been. I don't remember leaving off with that in Superman 18, but story very, very interesting idea for Superman to do is just to freeze a bunch of them and just let them adrift in space. The art in this issue wasn't bad. I'm still not a huge fan of Rockefort's art as a whole, but he's getting better. And I think you made a comment when we were off air that he draws his issues very kinetically stylized. I definitely think you're right about that.
Yeah, he seems to put more time into certain images than he does the rest. And I feel like, especially the tech stuff, when he's doing the high-tech spaceship battles like on Hell on Earth, he puts a lot of time into that. And then the other pages he rushes because he doesn't have a lot of time to complete the issue because he's his own penciler and inker.
Right.
The workload. But I do think his Lois Lane and Diana Prince are fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Lois Lane and Diana were awesome in this issue. I absolutely loved both of them in this issue, specifically Diana.
It's great out of the costumes and interacting in their personal lives. It's showing that they actually are starting to develop a deeper relationship other than two beings who are godlike, who have no peers.
Right.
In the pantheon of superheroes. And they've come together out and this seems like a necessity, but now they're starting to integrate themselves into each other's personal lives and alter egos, and I think that's just going to deepen the connection a bit more. And obviously with Orion coming to stop Superman for some unknown reason, relating to Diana Prince, it looks like it's going to be like a great story.
Yeah, I mean, Orion's part in all this, I'm not sure why he's after Superman. Like you said, for some unknown reason, kind of didn't make sense to me as to why Orion would come after Superman. Maybe something in the future that we saw last issue with that prophecy wall and Highfather. I just don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But, I mean, I thought this issue was really, really good, especially with Hector Hammond manipulating the minds of not only Clark, but, I mean, Diana and Lois and Jimmy. I think you're right. I think Lois and Jimmy were a little out of character in some of this, especially if you don't know they're being controlled psychokinetically. That made a lot more sense when I found out that's what was going on. Clark's hallucinations with Lois in the Wonder Woman costume kind of made me laugh a little. What did you think of that specific page, dude?
I don't was brilliant, because it's just something like, and because Clark Kent obviously fancies Lois Lane, and he obviously fancies Diana Prince, and he sort of married them two together. So like, that's what he's thinking. Is like, it seems like his ultimate fantasy is Lois Lane in a Wonder Woman costume, and you can't. I saw the face, and I knew that image was Lois Lane because of the consistency that Rockefeller had with drawing Lois and drawing Diana. Even though they look a little bit similar, they've both got black hair, striking blue eyes. They're physically built the same way. They seem to have the same body type, but it's just like, it's just the subtle little facial details that differentiates the two women. And I knew that was because of the really good, consistent art on both of those pages.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I definitely do believe that there's a consistency to Rockefort's Lois and Diana. You can definitely tell the difference between Lois and Diana, considering Diana is so much taller than Lois is. But, I mean, I liked Rockefort's art in this issue when it comes to some things. I'm not a huge fan of Rockefort's Superman, but I like Rockefort's Clark. I like Lois, obviously. I like Diana. They just look great. Good interiors. I was really impressed this time around.
I'm a Superman to Clark ratio, I think, is really well balanced, because typically some Superman stories just tend to be about Superman and forget Clark Kent ever existed.
Yeah.
And some world for ages, and it looks like that. Like, I know with the interviews I've read with Scott Lobdell, his mission is to make you care about Clark Kent as much as you care about Superman, and I think he's doing a with that. But Clark, an integral part of all of the people's lives that he affects, and showing that the alter ego actually does matter as much as the superhero behind it. But when I was rereading the issue, I noticed that Hector Hammond was affecting the characters. What I did notice on pages 7 and 8, particularly with Lois and Jimmy and then with John, was that they had these yellow lines above the head. I thought that Hector Hammond's influence seeping in.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even notice that, but now I do.
Now,
yeah, I see what you mean.
It's just them being surprised and shocked, and after the movement of their head or their face, sort of, to show that their faces is changing, that they're shocked to see something. I thought that instead of Hector Hammond, his influence seeping in.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But also, like you said, the opening scenes when Superman's confronting the Solitarians, I thought it was brilliant, because it proves that you don't need an origin story for all the villains, that you could just come into the end of an action scene, the end of a confrontation, and through and dialogue, you can get the fact that there was a fight that's gone down, and Superman's worse for wear. And it shows like a great adventure that he is having. So it's like we're dropping in on his life, and we don't need to know that the complete origins of these characters yet. It's I think superhero films need to explore, is that they always want to know, they always want the villain's origin as well as the hero's origin, where I think it'd be more interesting if one of them took a risk and just introduced the villain without the so you can just open the scope of the world and introduce more characters in the film world. And that's something that comics do really, really well. When it's done well, it's brilliant, and when it's done poorly, you know, you miss the little details in the villain's origins. But I think he's a strong enough writer that didn't care about the origin of these Solitarians. It was just another enemy that Superman defeated in his week, just like a typical week or a typical month.
Yeah, for sure. Do you actually think he froze him and threw him out into space?
Yeah, I think he did. I think it wasn't an influence of Hector Hammond. I think it was just Scott Lobdell showing you a day in the life of Superman, or a month in the life of Superman, and these were just another villains that he had to overcome. And I thought it was brilliant that he saw his strategic mind at play, that he's not just brute force and strength. He had the foresight to gather the water he needed and then throw it in the air, then count down when the impact was going to hit, so he perfectly timed it. And I think that you can see the influence of Batman on him. because that's a very Bruce Wayne characteristic, is always planning ahead. And I think the Justice League is going to bring out the best of all the heroes. But again, it just offers another shade to Superman's character. He's not a one-note character like people accuse him of. He can be everything, and with a good writer and interesting stories, he could give any hero a run for his money. But yeah, I also like the Perry White and Clark Kent.
Oh yeah, exchange. No, I absolutely love that exchange.
But did you see the article that Clark was holding up in Lois's apartment? The title was My Night with Superman, which is canon for Donner films. So
yeah,
it was in the continuity. I really liked that. I really did.
No, I did too. No, I absolutely loved that. I mean, that immediately brought Superman the movie to my mind. And it was just a really great way to incorporate old Superman mythos with new Superman mythos, which is really nice to see.
Oh, definitely. But what I wanted to ask now is, because that is now canon and it does remind us of Superman the movie, do you think if Man of Steel is successful, because we've not seen General Zod, do you think they might port over Zod's film characterization into the comics?
They might. Who knows? I'm hoping we eventually see General Zod, and I do believe if this movie is successful that we will see General Zod eventually. It just depends. I want to see Michael Shannon version of Zod, not Terrence Stamp's version of Zod. I would much rather see a new version of Zod than the old Superman the movie type style of Zod. But I think they will use him eventually.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if this film is successful the way we think and hope it will be, I think it'd behoove DC to take what's successful from the films and incorporate it into the mythology, because that's what Marvel's done. If you look at all the Avengers costumes, they're basically the film costumes, and Tony Stark now reads like Robert Downey Jr., so there's a cohesiveness and a synchronicity between the comics and the films, so people, if they want to jump over into the comics, won't be bewildered by the comics, because it just lines up with the film.
Right.
I think because we've not seen General Zod in the new continuity, I think, not taking like his likeness, but I think like that whatever driving force is behind him in the film, I think that should be ported over into the comics just to give it a little bit more of immediacy, but also go, did you like General Zod? Well, here's a boatload of Superman comics that's new in continuity. Come over and read them.
Yeah.
Just as good as the film.
I'm wondering whether or not we will see the symbiotic suit in Man of Steel.
Yeah, because we've not seen it. The trailers didn't give us show us how he obtained the suit. From, like I said, everything I've read, I assume that because he's on Krypton, well, because Krypton's got a red sun, there's no powers there, so his Superman suit is like a bodysuit, and then the war gear, or like General Zod's big bulky battle armor, is put on top of that.
Right.
Because the trailer, General Zod's got a very similar, he wears a very similar black suit to Superman's, but his has got his Zod symbol on,
yeah.
Whereas Superman's has got the S emblem. And then when you see Jor-El, some of the figures that have been released, you can see the Superman bodysuit underneath the armor that's on top of it.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that's the route they're going to go to, whereas because he's on Earth, he doesn't need the armor because he's invulnerable. With the
right.
Yellow springing out his powers. It's what I think, but I'm not 100% on that. It's just a theory I was thinking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a very valid theory for sure. But, well, I think that's all I had for Superman 19, sir. I don't know about you.
No, that's everything I had as well.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to wrap up the show.
Rocketed as a beam from the exploding planet Krypton. Kal-El grew to manhood on Earth, whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave him fantastic superpowers. In the city of Metropolis, he poses as TV newsman Clark Kent, but battles evil all over Earth and beyond as Superman.
Superman in the Bronze Age is a weekly podcast covering the adventures of Superman from 1970 to 1986. Join host Charlie Niemeyer at superbronze1970.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, everybody. That's pretty much our show, guys. What an episode it has been, covering four books in one episode. Steven, thank you so much for coming on here and talking some Superman and Superboy and Supergirl. It has been awesome having you. I so appreciate your willingness to come on here and talk these issues with me, man.
Oh, no problem, mate. Thanks very much for having me.
Like you said, my pleasure.
It's always been an ambition of mine to be on a podcast, and I got to live it today, so it was good, and we had some good titles to talk about.
Yes, we did.
Hopefully the quality will continue with the new teams coming on.
I'm hoping so. Yeah. No, I'm really hoping so. I think Justin Jordan, I don't know who's going to be the new action writer. But
no, we don't. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we won't know until after he leaves, I think. But, I'm looking forward to Justin Jordan. I'm looking forward to Superman Unchained with Scott Snyder. That drops in June, right?
Yeah. Same time as, Superman Batman.
Yeah. So yeah,
which was a great title back in the.
Oh yes, it certainly was. Yes, it certainly was. Yeah. No, looking forward to that. What's that?
I don't know about. I just said that hopefully they can do what Loeb and McGinnis did and deliver just really great action stories that encompasses the entire DC universe and shows us how great both Superman and Batman are.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised it's taken them this long to get a Superman Batman title out.
Same here, but I don't know. That's just the nature of the beast, isn't it?
Yeah.
What we think they should do, they never do.
Right. No, that's true. But did you want to hand out your Twitter so if people want to follow you, they can?
I don't know what my Twitter is, to be honest.
Oh, you don't? Not off the top of your head, huh?
I think it's SRJ Vaughn. That's VAUGHAN.
Awesome.
I think that's what it is.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is myself. So
pretty sure that's it. Because I think I changed it.
Yeah.
To something. I think that is it. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you're not a podcaster yourself. Maybe after this, you will be. You never know, right?
You never know, but probably not.
Well, you are welcome back on this show anytime, sir. I just want to thank you again for popping on here. I appreciate it. So
no problem. And anytime you want me back, like I said, just give me a bell, and I'll quite happily carve some time out.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm definitely gonna want you to have you back after Man of Steel drops to talk about the movie. So we'll definitely have to do that.
Yeah, regardless of if it's spectacular box office success we think it will be, or a massive failure, I'm sure it'll be a very interesting.
Don't say that, on. Sir. It's not going to be a failure. I don't want it to be a failure.
There's no justice in the world if it's a failure, I tell you.
No, there's none.
But the skeptic I am at heart, you just have to have that in the back of your mind just to prepare myself so I don't have to down and cry and dark thoughts.
No, I will be very disappointed if it's not everything that I want it to be.
Same here. But before that, we've got the Superman Unbound coming out, so hopefully that's a good...
That's right. Yeah, we'll all have to have you back on to talk about that as well.
Yeah, hopefully my copy should be coming to me soon.
Nice. Very nice.
I've pre-ordered it on Amazon.
Well, as always, guys, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/SupermanFamilyPodcast. I'm SF Podcast on Twitter. I would love some more followers on Twitter. I only have 23, and Danny always makes fun of me for not having enough followers on Twitter. So please Twitter it up if you want to follow me there. You can also send me an email, which you, sir, have emailed me on quite a consistent basis.
I have, yeah. On Twitter as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You constantly tweet me, which is awesome. So... And I will tweet back. If you tweet me, I will tweet back. So, or if you ask me to retweet you, I will retweet you as well. So, but the email is mail@supermanfamily.com. So yeah.
I think that's going to do it for us, guys. Thank you so much, Stephen, again, for coming on. And I appreciate it very much.
Always, Andrew. Thanks very much for putting up with me, mate.
Oh, no problem, dude. Anytime.
Cheers.
So,
take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too. We will talk to you later.
Of course. Bye now.
See ya.